Welcome to The Pen and the Yad. Rabbi Michael Siegel of Anshe Emet Synagogue in Chicago talks with author Jonathan Eig about this week's Torah portion, Bahar Bahukotai, Liberty, American or Biblical Style.
Have you ever visited Philadelphia? Have you ever seen the Liberty Bell?
Yeah, I saw it as a kid, although I mostly just remember that it was surrounded with plexiglass and that we whisked right past it on our way to lunch or something. It did not make a big impression.
Sounds like a seminal moment in your life.
Yeah, perhaps that's why I remain so skeptical about democracy, because I didn't have time to really read the words on the Liberty Bell.
Well, had you taken the time, it's a pretty impressive message.
It's not too late. Go ahead, lay it on me.
All right. Well, listen, for every rabbi, that's the hope, that it's not too late. Proclaim liberty throughout the land and to the inhabitants thereof. And the notion that you are ringing a bell, I mean, the metaphor is very powerful, that we are a nation that is ringing with this message. And I can't think of a more powerful message for a nation in midst, you know, beginning a revolution against a larger empire than that. And I'm quite sure that that message inspired an entire people to take up arms.
Yeah, I like the idea, obviously, of ringing a bell of freedom, except that even the words you quoted are limiting in who they apply to. Liberty throughout the land and the inhabitants thereof. It sounds like that would mean everybody, but obviously it didn't, because the inhabitants of the land who were here before us, the Native Americans, and then the slaves who were brought over to this land were not entitled to that liberty. So why wasn't the bell ringing for them?
Well, I think that's a great question, and I think it's an evolving message. There's no question about that. So you're right that the message wasn't really directed at everyone at that moment, but if we can just look at the people who heard it, and by the way, Jews were not included in that message as well, for at least in the minds of many. And had it not been for people like George Washington, who recognized synagogues at the very beginning, I'm not sure where Jews would have come out in the end of all of this. So you're quite right that it was a subjective understanding of inhabitants. But what's of note is that this is a quotation from the book of Leviticus, and it actually comes from this week's Parsha, this week's portion. And the power of that idea stands in the Torah as well. But what I want to suggest to you is that the idea in the Torah is not a democratic ideal. The way that this text is used in American literature is. And so one should not posit from this that the Torah is talking about democracy as we understand it. And I think that the differences are really important to point out.
That's reasonable. Hopefully we can explore a little bit about what it means when those words from the Torah are put on a Liberty Bell, and how they informed our concept of democracy, how they informed our concept of equality and justice. So let's go.
Yes, well, I think that the founding fathers were enamored with the Enlightenment, enamored with the idea of the rational prowess of mankind and the ability of human beings through their rational abilities can actually develop a near utopian society. Sure, that's the thinking of Jefferson and Franklin and others. The belief in the potential of human beings. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And obviously there were some blind spots there too. But yeah, I'll give you that.
Okay.
They were focused on equality and ideals of justice, for sure.
Well, Thomas Jefferson thanks you for that vote of confidence, I'm sure.
And his slaves perhaps do not.
That is true. And I give you that point. But I don't think that we're able to really get into the ideas of Jefferson without understanding the differences in the Torah itself. Remember that the founding fathers, they are very knowledgeable of the Bible, and they're going to make all kinds of references to it. They see themselves as the new Israel. The pilgrims understood themselves as the new Israel. So these ideas are very current in their minds. But the reality is that the Bible is talking about a very different type of society, whereas the founding fathers believe that all men are created equal, and yes, it's a very subjective list there. When the Bible, when the Torah talks about people being created, B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God, that means that everyone has inherent human worth. So there are parallels there. But the difference is that for the Israelites, their freedom, so to speak, is under the aegis of God. And while when related to other human beings, there is a general acceptance of equality, when it comes to God, they are all subjects to God, and they are all serving God. And that is not an idea that is current amongst the founding fathers. The founding fathers would say that we are here to serve democracy. And as citizens, we need to be engaged in the democratic ideal, but free to pursue our lives as free men. From the Torah's point of view, your freedom under God is to serve God, and the best way to serve God is to create a holy society. And so they're very different in our sense of obligation.
Yeah, and often all of these things sound good until you get into practice. When things get down to the details, that's when it becomes a little harder to be idealistic and to say all men are created equal, or to say that, you know, all of us are created in God's image, because suddenly, you know, self-interest comes into play. And it's human nature also to feel like you're better than the next guy and that you're not all equal and created equally in the image of God. I like the ideal, but I wonder, even in the Torah, whether you start to see some of the complicating factors coming into play.
Well, there's no question. From the Torah's perspective, everyone is equally obligated to God. In America, everyone is equal in the pursuit of happiness. So in other words, one is freedom from, and one is freedom to. Freedom from the obligation, and the other is freedom to be obligated, right? Freedom to practice and create a just society. It's just a very different approach. Let me give you a concrete example, okay? In this week's Torah reading, amidst this idea, what the Liberty Bell says, proclaiming liberty throughout the land, its context is all part of something we call the sabbatical year. Every 7 years, the Israelite farmer must allow their land to lie fallow. It's the sabbatical year, right? The seventh year, like the seventh day of the week, it's the sabbatical year. So they have to allow their crops to lie fallow for that year. And it's a legal system called Shemitah. And in Israel today, you'll also see this being practiced. Agricultural people will call this crop rotation, right? So you let the land lie fallow so it can replenish itself, and that's how the land remains usable for long periods of time. But the concept behind it is much different than we would say in the American system. We're a capitalistic system, right? So the farmer is free to work hard and make the most of himself and make the most money and live his life or her life to the best of their ability on their land. And it's a good idea, by the way, to rotate your crops if you want to have them for years to come. From the Torah's perspective, it's an obligation. You have to let the land lie fallow. And why? Because it doesn't belong to you. The earth is the Lord's, the fullness thereof, according to the book of Psalms. And so the idea, the inherent idea, is that the land doesn't belong to you. And so if the land doesn't belong to you, you have it on loan. And so you're obligated to God to follow God's law. And so now, after seven sets of 7 years, you have what's called the Yovel, the Jubilee year. And in the Jubilee year, not only do you let your land lie fallow, but if you have purchased land from someone, maybe their crops didn't come in over a period of years. And so now these people are indentured servants. You own their land. You allow them to farm what's formerly their land, but now it's your land. You have to give that land back to them. You have to release them from that contract. If you have indentured servants in your household, you have to release them. In other words, the word that was translated as liberty, as drawer, really means release. So it says that proclaim release to the inhabitants thereof. That's what the Torah is talking about. Whereas in the for the founding fathers, they were saying proclaim liberty, the kind of enlightenment notion of liberty to all of the inhabitants, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very different understanding of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, but I see a common thread in that what sounds good or what sounds like a principle worth adhering to becomes really difficult in reality when you ask somebody to turn over money that they've earned, property that they've purchased, or in the case of indentured servants, slaves that they feel entitled to because they put out money to purchase. Can certainly see where the ideals of justice would suggest that we should all renounce our wealth, but it's very hard to get people to give up something that they feel they've earned over the, you know, whether it's land or in the case of slavery, human beings.
Right. So I think that Joe Biden would have something to say about that when he gave his address the other night. What was he talking about? He was talking about a huge new plan, trillions of dollars, to, in a sense, create a sense of equity in America, in part, right? So part of this plan has to do with education to ensure that every person, no matter where their economic strata is in this country, will have education, and on it goes. And to ensure that families are protected financially, and who's going to pay for it? The wealthiest of wealthy people. And one of the really interesting things that Joe Biden said in that speech was that it was your patriotic duty to pay taxes. Now, what do you think of that idea?
Well, I think that it is part of the fundamental essence of democracy, that we have to pay our taxes, that we have to contribute to the society, that we are, you know, united in our goals and united as a people, then that requires some sacrifice, but that's not very popular these days. And the word socialism has become like a, you know, like the word commie was in the 50s, right? You accuse someone of being a socialist, believing that we should share, redistribute the wealth of this country, and suddenly you are, you're tarred, you're branded as a radical leftist. So I think it sounds good until you ask people to actually sacrifice some of their wealth or some of their power. And we're going through a really interesting reckoning in society right now where you know, people are being asked to reconsider what kind of privilege they have and how they can sacrifice to distribute that more equally. I think it's a great conversation that we're having, as you find in the Torah, when you ask people to forgive all their debts after 30 years. The conversation is one thing and doing it is another.
Right. You see that what Joe Biden is doing, or President Biden, I should say, forgive me, what President Biden is doing is he's, in a sense, kind of moving towards the Torah's argument. I don't think that people were very excited about the sabbatical year, if you owned land and things of this nature. And there's a whole very rich literature on this, and there are questions as to even whether it was even practiced. But let's just assume for our case that it was practiced, right? This was the equivalent of President Biden's latest plan. And it was a way to end the cycle of poverty, whether it's through, you know, farming issues or all kinds of bad decisions along the way, that a family could, in a sense, become part of that cycle of poverty. And for generations to come, those people would be servants, or they would be in servitude of some sort, or they would just simply be stricken with poverty. So the Torah is saying, no, God says, this is my land. I want you to give it back, and you are obligated to me to do that. And if you don't do it as a nation, I'm going to exile you from the land. That's the kind of the premise that's being used here. It's not your patriotic duty, but it is your Jewish responsibility, your Jewish obligation to do that. But the structure of the Torah is that you don't actually own the property that you have. Rather, it's on loan to you. The American system is based upon hard work and success, based upon a capitalistic ideal. And so if you go to a wealthy person, you say, listen, I just want you to know that even though you've done really well, you have an obligation to give because it's not really yours. It belongs to God. I'm not sure how well that conversation's going to go.
No, it's difficult, and that's partly why, you know, we've struggled with it so much. You have to keep banging away at it. You know, it's interesting. I was listening to recordings from the Kennedy White House. You know, you can go online now and you can hear the tapes that that Kennedy made in office, right? So right after the March on Washington, he invited all of the leaders of the civil rights movement to come to the White House. Martin Luther King, A. Philip Randolph, Whitney Young, they're all there. And Kennedy a couple of times says to these guys, why can't you get your children to stay in school? And in fact, he says, like the Jews, the Jewish families are really making great strides in America because they really push their kids to stay in school and families are excelling. Why can't you get the black children to stay in school? And when he says it for the second time, I think it was Roy Wilkins interrupts him and says, Mr. President, we'll do our part. You do your part. End segregation. End all of the prejudice against African-Americans. You do what you can and we'll do what we can. And it's a really powerful moment. And it reminds me of what you're saying, that the people in power have to give up some of that power. It's not just enough to say, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
That's right. As King famously said, what if you don't have boots?
Right.
What if you don't have shoes? And so what is our ultimate responsibility to create a just and equitable society? Mm-hmm. And so distill all of that into one worldview that gave us the Liberty Bell and another worldview that gave us the Torah. And in both cases, there are real challenges to the system. But I would suggest that there was an ideal that we were working towards. And I think that same ideal is in place today. And the challenge is that how will we understand our obligations as Americans? Certainly, the Torah had its own view of obligation and the fact that we were ultimately all servants of God. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Rabbi.